Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Peter Miller, and he did a film about Sacco and Vanzetti. And Sacco and Vanzetti is such a unfortunate, tragic situation that happened in this country. And I've read books and, you know, it's terrible. So, Peter, share your story, why you started researching Sacco and Vanzetti.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. The story of Sacco and Vanzetti is something that I heard about, you know, much of my life. I actually grew up in Massachusetts where the case took place in the 1920s. And it's one of those things that, you know, I knew the names, but I didn't know the story. But in fact, during the 1920s, everybody was thinking about Sacco and Vanzetti, and people have been thinking about them ever since. There have been dozens of books written about them, and movies, and plays, and poems, and artwork. And the story is about injustice in America, and it resonates and continues to resonate to the present. So I think the story of these two Italian working men who were executed in 1927 somehow has had this extreme resonance, because so much of what goes on around us and has gone on in our history makes us think back about their case.
So tell us a little bit about Sacco and Vanzetti. Both of them were immigrants from Italy, and they were both laborers, kind of. And how did the wheels of injustice or justice finally indict them for a crime which many believe they did not commit?
So Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti were two Italian immigrants, young men who came over to the United States in search of a better life around the beginning of the 20th century. Sacco came from the south of Italy, from Puglia. Vanzetti came from the north of Italy, from the Piedmont. Both of them sought work doing, you know, manual labor. Sacco became a worker in shoe factories. Vanzetti had a whole bunch of different jobs, but ultimately settled down as a fish peddler who pushed a cart full of fish through a neighborhood in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The two of them were very different from each other. Sacco was a family man who had a young kid and loved to be out in nature and work with his hands. Vanzetti was more of a philosopher, poet, though a working class guy, not an educated person. He was always with a book. Both of them, however, when they got to the United States and experienced what it was like to work in factories or to do construction or the kind of incredibly difficult stuff they were facing with. And when they saw how Italian immigrants were being ill-used in this country and discriminated against, they both independently had social justice streaks within them and became involved in trying to improve the conditions of the world. And they both became drawn to the anarchist movement. They both believed that the capitalist system that was going on in the United States, what they were experiencing personally, was terribly unfair and needed to be changed, and needed to be changed fundamentally. And they became, at a time when people were getting involved in radical causes and socialism and in labor unions, they gravitated towards anarchism. And they believed that through anarchism they could help change the world. And they both became involved in a very, very radical anarchist organization that believed in fundamental change. They didn't really know each other that well. They were probably at the same meetings. But one evening they were arrested in the wake of a terrible, brutal murder and robbery at a shoe factory in a town south of Boston. And the crime was quickly pinned on these two men, on Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti, who we'll get into the details of it, but from all evidence that I've seen, could not be connected to this crime, but at a time when discrimination against radicals and discrimination against Italian immigrants was at its absolute worst, they were arrested, charged, and tried for this brutal, terrible crime that they almost certainly had nothing to do with. It became an international cause over the course of years and years of their being tried and appealing the case. Their case took on a symbolism much, much bigger than that of a small town murder case involving a couple of poor immigrant workers.
What I found so interesting about the story was Sacco, like you said, was a family man. He had two young children and a wife. And Vanzetti was a bachelor, but Sacco had such a much more pessimistic attitude. And Sacco would go on these hunger strikes where the prison officials had to force feed him just to keep him alive. And
these are two incredibly sensitive men who feel injustice deeply in their bones, though they're very different from one another. And though Vanzetti, and Sacco were, you know, approached the world quite differently. They both had this extraordinary streak of wanting justice and fairness and decency. And when they experienced this cruel 7-year miserable time locked up, yeah, they went on hunger strikes. They protested as best you can when you're in prison. They appealed repeatedly the conviction of their crime, and to no avail. As Sacco, who was separated from his family and who was really suffering, at times lost hope. But all the while they're both in these miserable prison cells awaiting execution, they're writing letters. And they're writing letters to their families, they're writing letters to their political comrades, they're writing letters to people out in the world who have found out about them. And the letters that Sacco and Vanzetti wrote from prison are some of the most powerful things I've ever read in the English language, being written by people who just learned English, but there's such passion and insight and wisdom in these writings. And so when I'm making a documentary about them, my film Sacco and Vanzetti, which tells their story, we had a couple of wonderful actors read from these letters to kind of help bring the story along. So John Turturro is reading the letters of Vanzetti, and Tony Shalhoub, who is obviously the star of the TV show Monk, reads the letters of Nicola Sacco. And the letters that we hear in the film are just so powerful and so moving, and you really get a sense of just how deep and thoughtful and soulful these two men were.
Now, before they were arrested, Vanzetti had gone to Mexico, and I believe if my thought process is correct, if it had not have been for that trip to Mexico, Vanzetti would not have been arrested. Am I correct?
So Sacco and Vanzetti are part of this anarchist faction, this anarchist organization that is trying to actually bring about a revolution in America. They want to overthrow capitalism. They want to create revolution. I mean, these are not sometimes in the mythology of Sacco and Vanzetti, there's a belief that these are these two pacifist philosophical guys. They're in fact really concerned about the state of the world, and they want to make fundamental change. And the group they're with are revolutionaries who go to Mexico in part to wage revolution. They also go because it's the beginning of World War I, and there's some of the people, I think, believe that they can avoid serving in this horrible war that is this pointless conflict by going away. And during the trial, Sacco is asked why he ran away to Mexico when World War I is happening and every patriotic American should run off, should, you know, join the army and fight in this crazy war. It became actually something that was used against them by the prosecution to say you fled your country at a time when it needed you. And the fact is that the war was a miserable and terrible thing that one, if one could have fled, one probably should have. But the fact that these weren't patriotic Americans came up as an issue that damned them and condemned them during their trial. Sacco and Vanzetti were not on trial for being anarchists and revolutionaries or draft dodgers. They were on trial for a shoe factory murder and robbery, which was almost certainly carried out by a gang of hoodlums out of Rhode Island who held up shoe factories regularly. This was what they did. But somehow this crime was pinned on these two men. And once it went to trial, the fact that they were Italians and the fact that they were radicals made it impossible for them to get a fair trial in the American judicial system. So in 1921, when they're on trial, the judge insults them, calls them anarchist bastards. The foreman of the jury basically says to another friend, you know, who cares if they did it or not? They should hang them anyway. The atmosphere in the air is so discriminatory and bigoted that there's no way these guys can actually get fair treatment.
Now, the night that Sacco and Vanzetti were executed, there was another young fellow that was executed before them. And from what my understanding is, a young man that was executed before them was the perpetrator of the crime. Did you come to that realization?
Well, people will be debating the guilt or innocence of Sacco and Vanzetti for the rest of time. And one of the reasons that their trial, that their guilt or innocence will never be established firmly is because the state executed them. One of the many problems with the death penalty, besides the fact that it's immoral and wrong and discriminatory and just an unethical mess, is that when you kill your defendants, you never have the chance to find out what really happened. So we won't know whether Sacco and Vanzetti did this crime. From all of the evidence that I've read, and I've read dozens of books about the case, and some of them insist that Sacco's guilty and Vanzetti isn't, and some insist that they're both guilty, and some insist that they're not guilty. The evidence that I've seen of the hanky-panky that was done by the police with the ballistics evidence in the case, which was the thing that tied Sacco to the crime, seemed so faulty and so problematic that there really is nothing that connects Sacco and Vanzetti to this crime that sticks. There were a bunch of eyewitnesses whose testimony was contradictory and they recanted. There was a whole chain of how the bullets that were pulled from the body might or might not have matched Sacco's gun. Nobody in the world thinks that Vanzetti did this crime. Some people pin it on Sacco based on some old evidence that doesn't really stand up with a whole lot of research that has been done. The people who probably committed this crime, though we'll never know, and we should wait, you know, nobody should be judged guilty until there's been a proper trial, that the people who probably did this crime was a gang out of Providence, Rhode Island called the Morelli Gang. And there's a guy named Celestino Medeiros, who was a young Portuguese immigrant who was arrested on a different crime, who, while he was in prison, confessed that he had been involved with the crime that Sacco and Vanzetti were accused of, and that Sacco and Vanzetti were not there and weren't part of this. He was executed for a different crime on the exact same night that Sacco and Vanzetti were executed. He had confessed. He handed Sacco a note, or had a note passed to Sacco in the prison saying, I was there, I was involved, these guys weren't. And yet, even with that confession, the wheels of justice were set in motion and Sacco and Vanzetti could not be spared.
Well, you know, there was not only an outcry in this country, but there was an international outcry. There were demonstrations all over the world before the execution of Sacco and Vanzetti, and you know the judge was so set on the execution, no matter what people did, no matter what people said, he was going to kill them. Tell us a little bit about the mindset of the judge in this case.
The judge in the case is a guy named Webster Thayer, old line New England WASP bigot, who really didn't like immigrants, especially didn't like Italian immigrants, really didn't like radicals, and Sacco and Vanzetti were very radical. And everything that he did in his courtroom was designed to prejudice the case against these two men. Of course, this was a jury trial, so the judge didn't ultimately cast the verdict on Sacco and Vanzetti. It was the 12 Anglo-Saxon men, many of whom publicly expressed their disdain for the defendants. But Webster Thayer created an atmosphere in his courtroom that was hostile towards the defendants from the very beginning. And then after the trial, which happened, the crime happens in 1920, the trial happens in 1921, and promptly Sacco and Vanzetti's lawyers file appeal after appeal after appeal to show that the witnesses were inconsistent and recanted their testimony, to show that the firearms evidence was faulty and wrong, to show all kinds of things that were to show that the judge himself had spoken to a friend at a football game and said, "Did you see what I did to those anarchist bastards the other day? That'll hold him for a while," to show that there's prejudice in the case. All of these appeals are brought forth. And who rules on these appeals? The very judge, Webster Thayer, who had presided over their original trial. So Sacco and Vanzetti are appealing and appealing and appealing for years. Their convictions in 1921, for several years, they go up again to the same bigoted judge. And Webster Thayer says, "No, I'm afraid not," and turns down all of the appeals. So that by 1927, all that's left is to go to the governor of Massachusetts and to beg for his clemency. And the lawyers bring the case to the governor. A panel is assembled of three esteemed citizens of Massachusetts, all of whom, captains of industry, all of whom can't stand Sacco and Vanzetti and their type, are bigoted against immigrants and against Italians, and don't consider all of the evidence that shows that this was a terrible, faulty trial. And the governor basically says, "Go ahead and kill them." And on August 24th, 1927, they are executed in the electric chair, despite the fact that millions of people, not just, as you said, in the United States, but all over the world, have been protesting and fighting and marching. It is unbelievable how widespread the protests were in this case. If you watch the documentary, the footage of these giant rallies in Paris and London and Tokyo and South America and all over the United States is just extraordinary. Had no effect. The two men are executed.
Now, when Sacco and Vanzetti was in prison, and all of these demonstrations were going on all over the world, they were aware of them, right?
They were absolutely aware of them, and I think it. I think it's one of the paradoxes of this story that Vanzetti very eloquently says to a reporter at some point along the way, "Had it not been for these things, I would have lived out my life speaking at street corners to scorning men. No one would have known who I was. I would have been invisible. But because of this terrible tragedy that's befallen me and befallen Nicola Sacco, people have heard of me, and people have heard of our cause, and people have fought out against injustice." So in some ways, had Sacco and Vanzetti's case been quiet, had nobody protested, had even if they'd been found innocent, which they probably should have been, it wouldn't have had an effect. But the paradox of the case is this horrible tragedy that befell these two good men created an international awareness of the injustice that was going on in the United States against immigrants. And I should add, we're in a time right now in the United States where once again we're turning against our immigrants. America is better because of immigrants. America is a nation of immigrants, except for those people who were living here before the Europeans arrived. America is a land that was populated by people who came here from other places, and we're at our best when we welcome those people. And the disgrace of the Sacco and Vanzetti case should have been something that reminded people of how bigotry against Italian Americans just so wrong. And now we're doing the same thing to Muslim Americans, to Latinos, to other people who really want to come to this country and make their mark, and we shut the door on them.
Now, the filming of this movie, did this give you a different perspective on the death penalty?
That's a great question. The death penalty is something which we have in this country, and that I think the only other countries that still kill people are some of the worst dictatorships in the world. This is a case where, because we can get to know the humanity of these two men, of Sacco and Vanzetti, who are two extraordinary human beings, to live through the experience of making this film, where I really felt that their presence was in the room with us when we were doing this, when my producing and editing partner Amy Linton and I were putting this film together, we were, you know, weeping over the story of these two men and how they're executed, you know, brutally in the electric chair, how Sacco's family, his young son who was 7 years old when he went to prison, his baby daughter who was born when he was in prison, his wife who, you know, with whom he was deeply connected, what they go through because their father is murdered in the electric chair, what, you know, to the brutality and the stupidity of the death penalty are really exemplified when you get to know the human beings that are Sacco and Vanzetti. And I think probably when you get to know the human beings, any human being who's going to be executed, we are better than the death penalty. And it's a barbaric and unfair ritual that people, if they got to actually witness it and think about it and learn more, probably would not support. It certainly changed me by working on this film. And when we made the film and released the film in theaters, people from anti-death penalty organizations recognized that this story actually could help raise awareness about those issues.
Now, in America today, 2017, there is a definite anti-Muslim, you know, group out there, and there is not tolerance for people of different nationalities in America today. So the lessons from Sacco and Vanzetti, how could they be applied to today?
Well, we are in a very uncomfortable time in American history right now, where we're turning our backs on, or not we, certain people in America, including, unfortunately, the president, are scapegoating immigrants as if they are the cause of our problems. And it's very easy to scapegoat people when they don't look like you or they don't worship like you do. And we should go back to the 19-teens and the 1920s and look at how Italians were viewed back when there's a lot of Italian immigration, people escaping poverty and very difficult circumstances from Italy, coming to the United States and trying to find a way. A lot of Americans who had gotten here before them said, these people are dark, they're frightening, they practice a mysterious religion, Catholicism, which is not something that we like or want to have around. They're loyal to the Pope and not to our government. There's, you know, we don't want them here. And during the era in which Sacco and Vanzetti were being tried, immigration to this country was shut down. By 1924, basically most immigration to the United States, that wonderful period of time when people came through Ellis Island and became part of our country, was ended in large measure because of bigotry towards Italians. Imagine that, as we're in a country now where Italian Americans are so much a part of the fabric of this country. Well, fast forward to 2017, and how do we feel about Latinos? People who are coming with their families to try to make a living in the United States, people, you know, coming from Muslim countries. We passed travel bans against Muslims. Why? Because they don't look like us, because they don't worship like us. It's just what we were doing in 1919 and 1920 and the years leading up to the immigration acts of 1924, where we shut the door on immigration largely because of bigotry towards people that we feared. We would do very well to stop fearing people and start looking in their eyes and seeing who they are instead.
As you said that, I just thought of something pretty interesting. Sacco and Vanzetti were from Italy, and their cause was a justice for everybody. For the people that knew about the case, did anybody feel some kind of an allegiance to them, because they would think, oh, you know, I'm suffering from wage injustice, or, you know, things like that. Was there any kind of empathy for them?
I think that one of the reasons why Sacco and Vanzetti became a cause that people, millions of people flocked to, that, you know, artists made paintings about and musicians wrote songs about and poets wrote poems about, the reason that people marched on behalf of these men was largely because they were seen as being idealists who wanted to make things better for working people in this country. This was a time when to work in a mine or a mill or a factory or a restaurant kitchen or a, you know, digging a ditch or whatever it is that Sacco and Vanzetti had to do to make a living, was extremely dangerous, where there were no protections for workers, where labor unions, when they tried to organize, were smashed, attacked by people who didn't think that was, you know, by factory owners who didn't want to have that happen. There was terrible injustice against working people and terrible conditions for working people. I mean, this was a time when, you know, when if you worked in a factory, you could lose an arm or a leg or be burned in a fire, and presumably nobody cared, and there were very few government regulations or any protections for you. So Sacco and Vanzetti were standing up against that stuff and for people having safe, decent workplaces. They were union members. All these things, I think, inspired a lot of people to say, these guys are on our side, and what's being done to them is terribly unfair. You know, it didn't hurt that Sacco and Vanzetti, through their letters and through what people got to know about them, were also decent, likable human beings, and that also helped build their cause. But they became celebrities because they were perceived as people who were fighting for justice and receiving injustice.
Now, Peter, you've done other works besides Sacco and Vanzetti. Tell Focus on Albany listeners about the other works that you've done.
Well, I make documentary films mostly about American history. I've made a film called AKA Doc Pomus, which was about a songwriter who wrote wonderful songs like, you know, Why Must I Be a Teenager in Love and This Magic Moment and Save the Last Dance for Me. I made a film called Jews and Baseball, an American Love Story, about Jewish baseball players and how Jews assimilated into America. I made a film called Refugee Kids recently, which is about a school for refugee children in New York City where people, children escaping war zones and terrible things, figure out how to get assimilated into American schools. I made a movie recently about projections of America, about a World War II propaganda film unit that made movies about America to show newly liberated people overseas. I've made a bunch of films, and if you want to see more, go to willowpondfilms.com. That's my company, is Willow Pond Films, and you can see what it is I've been up to. Mostly I like to tell stories about underdogs and about people who haven't gotten a fair shake or have done something amazing to make the world a better place, but we haven't heard about them.
Now, if somebody wants to see Sacco and Vanzetti, how could they purchase or get the movie?
Sacco and Vanzetti was finished about a decade ago, but it's still in circulation. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. You can buy it from you can go to the Willow Pond Films website and buy it through there, or you can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble on DVD, or it's streaming on a bunch of different streaming services. I think it's not hard to find. You can, it's called Sacco and Vanzetti. It was finished in 2006 or 7, and it's out there in the world to be gotten. And I would love for people to watch it and think about it and share it and remember these two extraordinary human beings at the center of its story.
Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Focus on Albany. I hope everybody watches it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. So you've been listening to Focus on Albany. If you like the show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download it on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about the show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and thank you, Peter, for taking the time to talk about this remarkable story.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.